White Bear, King of Alamon. There was once, as well could be, a king. He had two daughters who were mean and ugly, but the third was as fair and sweet as the bright day. And when the king and all were fond of her, she once dreamed about a golden wreath, which was so lovely she couldn't live unless she got it. But as she couldn't get it, she began to pine and could not speak for sorrow. When the king found out it was the wreath she was grieving for, he had one made almost like the one the princess had dreamed of, and sent it out to goldsmiths in every land and asked them to make one like it. They worked both day and night. Some of the wreaths she threw away, and others she wouldn't even look at. Then one day, when she was in the forest, she caught sight of a white bear, which had the wreath she had dreamed of between its paws and was playing with it, and she wanted to buy it. No, it wasn't to be had for money, but only in return for herself. Well, life wasn't worth living without it, she said. Didn't matter where she went or who she got, if only she got the wreath. And so they agreed that he was to fetch her in 3 days' time, and that would be a Thursday. When she came home with the wreath, everyone was glad because she was happy again, and the king felt sure that it would be a simple matter to keep a white bear at bay. On the third day, the whole army was posted round the castle to deal with him. But when the white bear came, there was no one who could hold his ground against him, for no weapon could make any effect on him. He knocked them down right and left until they were lying in heaps. This, thought the king, was proving downright disastrous. So he sent out his eldest daughter, and the white bear took her on his back and rushed off with her. When they had traveled far and farther than far, the white bear asked, "Have you ever sat softer? Have you ever seen clearer?" "Yes, on my mother's lap I sat softer, and my father's court I saw clearer," she said. "Well, you are not the right one then," said the bear, and he chased her home again. The next Thursday he came again, and did just as he had done before. The army was out with orders to deal with the white bear, but neither iron nor steel bit on him, so he mowed them down like grass until the king had to ask him to stop. Then he sent out his next eldest daughter, and the white bear took her up on his back and rushed off with her. When they had traveled farther and farther than far, the white bear asked, "Have you ever sat softer? Have you ever seen clearer?" "Yes," she said. "In my father's court I saw clearer. On my mother's lap I sat softer." "Well, you're not the right one then," said the white bear, and chased her home again. On the third Thursday he came again. This time he fought even harder than before, until the king thought he couldn't let him knock down the whole army, and so he gave him his third daughter. Then he took her on his back and traveled away, far and further than far. And when they had reached the forest, he asked her, as he had asked the others, if she had ever sat softer or had seen clearer. "No, never," she said. "Well, you're the right one," he said. So they came to a castle, which was so fine that the castle her father lived in was like the meanest cottage in comparison. There she was to stay and live well, and she was to have nothing else to do but to see to it that the fire never went out. The bear was away during the day, but at night he was with her, and then he was a man. For 3 years all went as well as could be, but each year she had a child, which she took and rushed away with as soon as it had come into the world. So she became more and more downcast, and asked if she couldn't be allowed to go home and see her parents. Yes, there was no objection to that, but first she must promise that she would listen to what her father said, but would not to what her mother wanted to do. So she went home, and when they were alone with her, she told them how she was getting on. Her mother wanted to give her a candle to take with her, so she could see what the bear was like when he turned into a man at night. But her father said, "No, she shouldn't do that. It will only do more harm than good." But no matter how it was or was not, she took the candle stub with her when she left. The first thing she did, when he had fallen asleep, was to light it and shine it on him. He was so handsome that she thought she could never gaze her fill of him, but as she shone the light, a drop of hot tallow dripped onto his forehead, and so he awoke. "What have you done?" he said. "Now you have brought misfortune on us both. There was no more than a month left. If only you had held out, I would have been freed. For a troll hag had bewitched me, so that I'm a white bear during the day. But now it's over with us. Now I have to go there and take her." She cried and carried on, but he had to go, and go he would. So she asked if she could go with him. That was out of the question, he said. But when he rushed off in his bearskin, she seized hold of the fur all the same, flung herself up onto his back, and held on fast. Then they were off over mountain and hill, through grove and thicket, until her clothes were torn off, and she was so dead tired that she let go her hold and knew no more. When she awoke, she was in a great forest, and so she set out on her way again. She didn't know where her path led. At last she came to a cottage where there were two women folk, an old crone and a pretty little girl. The king's daughter asked if they had seen anything of White Bear King Valamon. Yes, they rushed by here earlier today, but he was going so fast that you wouldn't catch up with him again, they said. The little girl scampered about and clipped and played with a pair of golden scissors, which were of such that pieces of silk and strips of velvet flew about her, if she but clipped in the air. Wherever the scissors were, clothes were never lacking. But this poor woman, who has to journey so far in such rough roads, she'll have to toil hard, said the little girl. She has more need of these scissors than I, to cut clothes for herself, she said. And then she asked if she could give her the scissors. Yes, that she could. So the king's daughter set off through the forest, which never came to an end, all that day and night. And the next morning she came to another cottage. Here there were also two women folk, an old crone and a little girl. Good day, said the king's daughter. Have you seen anything of White Bear King Valamon? She asked. Were you to have had him, maybe? Said the old woman. That it was. Why, yes, he rushed by here yesterday, but he went so fast that you won't catch up with him, she said. The little girl was playing about on the floor with a flask, which was such that it poured out whatever they wanted, and wherever the flask was, drink was never lacking. But this poor woman, who has to journey so far and on such rough roads, she'll be thirsty and suffer many other hardships, said the little girl. And then she asked if she could give her the flask. Why, yes, she could. So the king's daughter got the flask, said her thanks, and set out again, walking through the same forest all that day and night. On a third morning she came to a cottage, and there was an old woman and a little girl. Good day, said the king's daughter. Good day to you, said the old woman. Have you seen anything of White Bear King Valamon? She said. Maybe you were to have had him, said the old woman. Yes, that it was. Why, yes, he rushed past here yesterday evening, but went so fast that you'll never catch up with him again, she said. The little girl was playing on the floor with a cloth that was such that, whenever they said it to be, cloth, spread thyself, and deck thyself with every good dish, it did so. And wherever the cloth was, good food was never lacking. But this poor old woman, who has to journey so far and on such rough roads, said the little girl, she may well both starve and suffer many other hardships. So she'll have more need of this cloth than I, she said. And then she asked if she could give her the cloth. That she could. So the king's daughter took the cloth and said her thanks and set off. Far and farther than far, through the forest, all that day and night she went. In the morning she came to a mountain spur, which was as steep as a wall, and so high and so wide that no end could she see. There was a cottage there, too, and when she came in, the first thing she said was, Good day. Have you seen whether White Bear King Valamon has traveled this way? Good day to you, said the old woman. Maybe it was you who was to have had him, she asked. That it was. Yes, he rushed up the mountain here 3 days ago, but nestlings can't get up there, she said. The cottage was full of little children, and they all clung to her mother's apron strings and cried for food. The old woman put a kettle full of pebbles on the fire. The king's daughter asked what was the good of that. They were so poor, said the old woman, they could afford neither food nor clothes, and it was so hard to hear the children crying for a bite to eat. But when she put the kettle on the fire, she said, Now the apples will soon be done. It seemed to deaden their hunger, and they were patient for a while. It wasn't long before the king's daughter got out the cloth and the flask, as you can imagine, and when the children were fed and happy, she clipped out some clothing for them with the golden scissors. Well, said the old woman of the house, since you've been so heartily kind to me and my children, it would be a shame not to do what we can to try to help you with the mountain. My husband is really a master smith. Now you just rest until he comes back, and I'll get him to forge claws for your hands and feet, and then you can try to crawl up. When the smith came, he started on the claws right away, and the next morning they were ready. She had no time to wait, but said her thanks, fastened the claws on her hands, and crept and clawed up the mountainside the whole day and night. And just when she was so tired she didn't think she could lift her hand again, but felt she would sink to the ground, she got to the top. There was a plain, with fields and meadows so big and wide that she had never imagined anything so broad and so smooth, and close by there was a castle filled with workers of every kind, who toiled like ants on an anthill. What is going on here? Asked the king's daughter. Well, this is where she lived, the troll hag who had bewitched White Bear King Valamon, and in 3 days she was to wed him. The king's daughter asked if she could talk with her. No, not likely. That was out and out impossible. So she sat down outside the window and started clipping with the golden scissors, and velvet and silken clothing flew about like a snow flurry. When the troll hag caught sight of that, she wanted to buy the scissors. For no matter how the tailors toil, it's no use, she said. There are too many to be clothed. The scissors weren't for sale, said the king's daughter, but the troll hag could have them, if she would let her sleep with her sweetheart tonight. She could certainly do that, said the troll hag, but she would lull him to sleep herself and wake him up herself. When he had gone to bed, she gave him a sleeping potion, and so he was in no condition to wake up, for all the king's daughter shouted and cried. The next day, the king's daughter went outside the window again, sat down, and started pouring from the flask. It flowed like a brook, both beer and wine, and it never ran dry. When the troll hag laid eyes on that, she wanted to buy it, for no matter how much they toiled, the brewing, distilling, it's no use. There are too many to drink, she said. It wasn't sale for money, said the king's daughter, but if she would let her sleep with her sweetheart tonight, she would give it to her. Yes, that she could certainly do, said the troll hag, but she would lull him to sleep herself and wake him up herself. When he had gone to bed, she gave him a sleeping potion again, so the king's daughter had no better luck that night either. He couldn't be awakened, for all she cried and shouted. But that night, one of the artisans was working in the room next door. He heard her crying in there, and he guessed what had really happened, and the next day he told the prince that she must have come, the king's daughter who was to have freed him. The next day went just like the others, with the cloth as well as the scissors in the flask. When it was dinner time, the king's daughter went outside to the castle, pulled out the cloth, and said, "Cloth, spread thyself, and deck thyself with every good dish." Then there was enough food for 100 men, but the king's daughter sat down alone. When the troll hag caught sight of the cloth, and she wanted to buy it, for no matter how much they cook and bake, it's no use. There are too many mouths to feed, she said. It wasn't for sale for money, said the king's daughter, but if she would let her sleep with her sweetheart tonight, she could have it. She could certainly do that, said the troll hag, but she would lull him to sleep herself and wake him up herself. When he had gone to bed, she came in with a sleeping potion, but this time he was on his guard and fooled her. The troll hag didn't trust him any more than just so far she didn't, for she took a darning needle and stuck it right through his arm to see if he were sleeping soundly enough. But no matter how much it hurt, he didn't move, and then the king's daughter was allowed to come in to see him. Now this was all very well, but they must get rid of the troll hag before he would be free. So he got the carpenters to make a trap door on the bridge, which the bridal procession was to cross, for it was custom there that the bride should ride first in the procession. When the troll hag started across the bridge with all her troll hag bridesmaids, the planks under them dropped open and they fell through. Then King Valamon and the king's daughter and all the wedding guests rushed back to the castle and took as much of the troll hag's gold and money as they could carry, and then rushed off to his country to hold the real wedding. But on the way, King Valamon stopped in and fetched the three little girls, and now she found out why he had taken the children from her. It was so that they could help her find him. So they caroused at the wedding, both lustily and long. The end. The Parson and the Sexton. There was once a parson who was such a blusterer that whenever you saw anyone come driving towards him on the highway, he would roar from afar, off the road, here comes the parson himself. One day, when he was carrying on like this, he met the king. Off the road, he shouted a long way off, but the king kept driving straight ahead. So, for once, the parson had to turn his horse aside. And when the king came alongside, he said, "Tomorrow you shall come to the court, and if you can't answer three questions I'm going to put to you, you shall lose both frock and collar for the sake of your pride." This was quite a different tune than what the parson was used to. Bluster and bellow he could, and carry on worse than that too. But question and answer was out of his field. So he went to the sexton, who was said to have a better head in his shoulder than the parson, and told him that he wasn't keen on going. "For one fool can ask more than 10 wise men can answer," he said. And so he got the sexton to go in his place. Well, the sexton went, and he came to the royal manor dressed in the parson's frock and rough collar. The king met him out in the porch, wearing both crown and scepter, and looking so grand he fairly shone. "So, you're there, are you?" said the king. Yes, he was. That was sure enough. "Now tell me first," said the king, How far is it from east to west?
That's a day's journey, that is, said the sexton.
How so? Asked the king.
Well, the sun rises in the east and sets in the west, and does it nicely in a day, said the sexton.
All right, said the king, but tell me now, what do you think I'm worth, just as you see me here?
Let's see, Christ was valued at 30 pieces of silver, so I'd better not set you any higher than 29, said the sexton.
said the king. Well, since you are so wise on all counts, tell me what I am thinking now.
Oh, I suppose you're thinking that it's the parson who's standing here before you, but I'm sorry to say you're wrong, for it is the sexton.
Ha ha! Then go home with you, and you be parson, and let him be sexton, said the king.
And so it was.
The House Mouse and the Country Mouse. There was once a house mouse and a country mouse who met on the edge of the forest. The country mouse sat in a hazel bush gathering nuts.
Blessings on your work, said the house mouse. Do I meet kinsfolk so far out here in the country?
Yes, indeed, said the country mouse.
You're gathering nuts, I see, and taking them home, said the house mouse.
I have to, for to have anything to live on during the winter, said the country mouse.
The husks are big, and the shells are full this year, so they'll go a long way to fill stomachs, said the house mouse.
That is indeed so, said the country mouse, who declared that she was well off and lived comfortably.
The house mouse maintained that she was better off, but the country mouse stuck to her point and said there was no place as good as the forest and mountain, and that she was better off herself.
The house mouse said she was better off, and this they could not agree on. At last they promised to visit one another at Christmas time, so they could see which one was better off. The house mouse was the first to go on her Christmas visit. She scurried through forest and deep valleys, and even though the country mouse had moved down the mountain for the winter, the way was both long and hard. It was uphill, and the snow was deep and loose, so that she got tired and hungry before she got there. Now it'll be good to have some food, she thought, when she arrived. The country mouse had scraped together pretty well. There were nut kernels and many different kinds of roots, and all sorts of good things which grow in forest and field. She had stored it all in a hole deep down in the ground so that it wouldn't freeze. Close by was a spring which was open the whole winter so she could drink as much water as she wanted. There was enough of what there was, and they both ate heartily and well, but the house mouse thought it was no more than the bare necessities of life. On this one can keep alive, she said, but it's not particularly good. Now you must be so kind as to come see me and taste my food. Yes, this the country mouse would do, and it wasn't long before she came. The house mouse had gathered together all Christmas fare which the wife to the house had spilled. There were bits of cheese and butter and tallow and crumbs of buttered bannock and oat cakes spread with cream. In the pan set to catch the drip from the beer tap, she had drank enough, and the whole parlor was filled with all kinds of good things to eat. They ate and lived well, and there was almost no end to the country mouse appetite. Such food she had never tasted. But then she became thirsty, for the food was both rich and fat, she said, and at last she had to have a drink. It's not far to the beer. This is where we drink, said the house mouse, and she jumped up on the edge of the pan, but she drank no more than would quench her thirst, for she knew the Christmas beer and knew it was strong. But the country mouse thought it was a glorious drink. She had never tasted anything but water, and took one sip after the other. She wasn't used to strong drink, so she was tipsy before she came down off the pan. Then she became lightheaded, and it went to her feet, and she took to running and hopping from one beer barrel to the other, dancing and cavorting on the shelves among the cups and mugs, and peeping and squeaking as though she was both drunk and mad, and drunk she was too by now. "You mustn't carry on as though you've just come out of the mountains today," said the house mouse. "Don't make such a fuss, and don't kick up such a racket. We've got quite a strict bailiff here," she said. The country mouse said she respected neither bailiff nor tramp. But the cat sat dozing on the cellar door and heard both the chattering and the commotion. Just then the wife went down to tap beer into a jug and lifted up the door, so the cat slipped into the cellar and pounced on the country mouse. And now she danced to another tune, I can tell you. The house mouse popped into her hole and sat safely watching the country mouse, who sobered up at once when she felt the cat's claws. "Oh, my dear bailiff, have mercy and spare my life, and I'll tell you a story," she said. "Out with it," said the cat. "Once there were two little mice," said the country mouse, squeaking slowly and so pitifully, for she wanted to drag it out as long as she could. "Then they weren't alone," said the cat, both short and crass. "Then we had a roast that we were going to roast for ourselves." "Then you didn't go hungry," said the cat. "Then we put it out on the roof to cool off," said the country mouse. "Then you didn't burn yourselves," said the cat. "Then the fox and the crow came and took it and ate it," said the country mouse. "Then I'm going to eat you," said the cat. But at that moment, the wife slammed the cellar door, and the cat was so startled that he let go his hold. And whoosh, the country mouse darted into the hole of the house mouse. From there, she went right out into the snow, and she wasn't slow at heading for home. "You call this being well off, and say that you live best," the country mouse said to the house mouse. "Heaven content me with less, then. Instead of such a big manor and such a hawk for a bailiff, why, I barely got away with my life." The Ash Lad Who Made the Princess Say, "You're a Liar." There was once a king who had a daughter, and she was such a liar that no one could equal her. So he made it known that the one who could lie so that he made her say, "You're a liar," would get both her and half the kingdom. There were many who tried, for everyone was only too willing to have the princess half the kingdom, but all of them fared badly. Then there were three brothers, who were bent upon trying their luck. The two eldest set out first, but they fared no better than all the others. So the Ash Lad set out, and he met the princess in the stable. "Good day," he said. "It is a pleasure to meet you." "Good day," she said. "It is nice to meet you too." "You don't have as big as a barn as we do," she said. "For, when a shepherd stands at each end and blows on a ram's horn, one cannot hear the other." "Oh, yes, indeed," said the boy. "Ours is much bigger, for when a cow has got with calf at one end of it, she doesn't bear it before she gets to the other."
"You don't say so," said the princess. "Well, you haven't got such a big ox as we do. There, you can see it. When a man sits on each horn, one can't reach the other with a 12-foot pole."
"Phew," said the boy. "We have an ox so big that when someone is sitting on each horn, blowing a horn, one can't hear the other."
"Oh, indeed," said the princess. "But you don't have as much milk as we do, all the same," she said. "For we milk into enormous troughs, and carry it in and pour it into big cauldrons, and curdle big cheeses."
"Oh, we milk into great cauldrons, and cart them in and pour them into huge brewing vats, and curdle cheeses as big as a house. And then we have got a gray mare to tread the cheese. But once it foaled in the cheese, and after we'd been eating cheese for 7 years, we came upon a big gray horse. I was going to drive to the mill with it one day, and then its backbone broke. But I knew a remedy for that. I took a spruce tree and put it in for a backbone, and no other back did that horse have as long as we had it. But that tree grew and became so big that I climbed up to heaven through it, and when I got there, one of the saints was sitting weaving a bristle rope of barley broth. All at once the spruce broke and I couldn't get down again, but the good saint lowered me down on one of the ropes, and I landed in a fox's den. And there sat my mother and your father patching shoes, and all at once my mother gave your father such a blow that the scurf blew right off him."
"You're a liar," said the princess. "My father's never been scurvy in his life."